Welcome everyone to the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst at the Score. Thank you so much for listening in, for downloading the show today. We were supposed to be back last week. Unfortunately, I had to take an extra week away to attend a funeral. Quick side note on that too. Somebody actually had their car stolen from the funeral home parking lot during visitation. What kind of scumbag move is that? You're stealing somebody's car at a funeral? It really shocked me. But anyway, I wasn't able to record last week, so we didn't get a chance to talk about the Baker Mayfield trade. We'll touch on that today, along with a couple other news items that I think are notable. But the main thing I want to hit on a little later in the show is some of the intriguing training camp battles we're going to see over the next month. And I don't know if everybody out there realizes it, but rookies are going to report to camp starting next week. The veterans will be the week after that. So it's been fairly quiet on the NFL front lately, but that is all about to change. What's also about to change is the dynamic of today's show, because it's not just me along for the ride. We also have a first-time guest, Dave Kluge of Football Guys. He's got his show over there, The Launch Pad. He's also got a bunch of other shows he's going to tell us about. I was on The Launch Pad with him a month or two ago, I think it was. It was a great time. You can also find him on Twitter, at Dave Kluge. Awesome guy, awesome host, awesome analyst. Dave, welcome to the show, man. How are you doing? How's the shoulder rehab coming? I got to ask you about that too.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on the show, first of all. Shoulder rehab is coming great. When you came on the show, it was just about 2 months ago, a few days before I had to go in for shoulder surgery, but now I'm out of my sling, ready to go. Just had my first hike of the summer yesterday. Nice. 2 days ago. So, you know, it feels like things are finally coming back into place. And I thought this was just going to completely throw my entire summer out of whack, but still got a few months ahead of me where I can get out there and enjoy the sunshine.
All right. Well, like I said, we weren't able to record the episode last week, so it might feel like we're extremely late to the party here talking about Baker Mayfield going to Carolina, but we're going to do it anyway. My rankings did go up right after the trade, so I already have that reflected in there in redraft and in dynasty. Even before the trade went down, I kind of already had it ranked like Mayfield was going to end up as the starter in Carolina or Seattle. So he didn't move that much in my rankings, but he goes to the Panthers where he's surrounded by a lot of talent at the skill positions. Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, they're the big stars there, but you also have Robbie Anderson. You have Terrace Marshall, who could get a bump from this. Maybe even Rashard Higgins, who he played with in Cleveland. Or if you really want to go deep at tight end, you're talking tight end premium leagues, maybe Tommy Tremble could do something out. It's a pretty decent group. The offensive line still a work in progress. We'll see how that impacts Mayfield. But Dave, let's get your thoughts on Mayfield moving to Carolina here. Does it make you a little more interested in any of those offensive pieces that I just mentioned?
You know, you already talked about Rashard Higgins, and that's the one guy that actually was able to see a little bit of a bump in my rankings, and I'll get into that in just a second. But really, you know, as fun as this story is and excited as I am for Baker Mayfield to get a shot with a new franchise, this just doesn't really move the needle for me all that much from a fantasy perspective. Christian McCaffrey was already my PPR RB1. You can't go higher than RB1, so I can't move him at all. And then my gut reaction was, you know, this is going to be great for DJ Moore. But then I opened up my rankings and I took a look. DJ Moore was already my wide receiver 16. And I can't really move him up from there. Looking at the guys ahead of him, Deontay Johnson, Cortland Sutton, Deebo Samuel, I just can't move DJ Moore any higher than I already have him. Get a little bit further down the list, and Robbie Anderson was a guy that I think would fit really well with Baker's big arm, but then you've got that weird tension, you know, with the comments on Instagram and saying that he didn't want him to be the quarterback, talking about mulling over retirement if Baker came there.
And Baker seems like a guy that's going to hold a grudge. I'm just going to say that. I think he saw those comments, and he's going to be upset about it.
Right. Like, I could see, you know, Robbie Anderson being in the doghouse all year because of that.
For sure.
Terrace Marshall, you know, very disappointing rookie season. Can't put a lot of faith in him. And like I said, the only guy who saw a significant boost in my rankings was Rashard Higgins, but that boost doesn't mean like, oh, you should go out and get Rashard Higgins anywhere. It went from not being anywhere on my draft board to, you know, maybe you throw a 20th round pick at him. And what I looked at, we got a 39 game sample size with Baker Mayfield as his quarterback, 28 games without him, and Higgins actually averaged over twice as many points when Baker Mayfield was his quarterback. So he's still just 27 years old. Baker really liked him in the red zone. If you're getting into some deep best ball leagues or something, I think you can throw a late dart on Rashard Higgins. But realistically, like I said, I think this was just more impactful for real life football than it is in fantasy.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Now, I did move CMC up to the number one spot. I had him just below Jonathan Taylor, so that was a a slight difference for me. DJ Moore is still that high-end wide receiver too, right? In that kind of range where you have him. And then the other guys, yeah, it was moving them up a few spots in my rankings, but nothing like major at this point. Nothing. Nobody's moving up 10, 20 spots or anything like that.
What I'm most excited about with this trade is just the week one matchup that he plays against Cleveland in week one. We get that right, like the NFL season starts and we get a revenge game narrative right out the gate. So I'm so excited for that game. That'll be a fun one.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of playing off the Mayfield news, that kind of leaves Jimmy Garoppolo now in limbo here, right? The only real suitor left is the Seahawks, who I mentioned before. And there was a report from Jeremy Fowler at ESPN that Seattle did their due diligence on Jimmy G. They did their homework on him as a potential option there. And listen, I don't love the guy as a quarterback, but I think he certainly would be an upgrade from the Drew Lock, Geno Smith battle that we're about to witness this season. So let's just speculate. You want to talk about, you know, revenge narratives and stuff. I don't know if they would trade him within the division. Maybe it would be a scenario where they actually just cut Jimmy G outright and then he ends up going to Seattle. But let's speculate. Let's just say one way or another, Jimmy G does get that last starting seat in the quarterback musical chair game here. He ends up with the Seahawks. How would that change your outlook for their offense versus, I mean, whatever you're currently projecting for them with Locke Smith with that combo under center?
Again, this is a move that I think would have huge implications in regular football. I don't know how much it really changes things from a fantasy perspective. Say what you want about, you know, wins not being a quarterback stat, but Jimmy Garoppolo just wins games. Like, I don't know how he does it. You know, they're dirty, they're ugly, but he finds a way to win games. The one thing I want to point out, though, is that Tyler Lockett is a phenomenal football player. I've been fighting this battle for years, and it seems like nobody ever wants to hear it. People have this idea that Lockett is nothing but a downfield burner who benefited from Russell Wilson's, you know, big throws and those moon balls downfield. But really, we've seen a big change in how he's been utilized over the last few seasons. Ever since Doug Baldwin left Seattle, Tyler Lockett has turned into a very reliable receiver in the short and intermediate parts of the field. He's seen a decrease in his depth of target, boost in yards after the catch, and I think that skill set as a very polished route runner, that allows him to get deep and he still gets those big plays, and he wouldn't get those deep throws with Jimmy Garoppolo, but I just see him as somebody who can get open, get off, whether it's off of press coverage or whether he can find the soft spots in zones. He just has a knack for getting wide open in the short and intermediate parts of the field where Jimmy Garoppolo really finds a lot of success. So overall, I think that if Jimmy G goes to Seattle, you know, they might get an extra two or three wins than they would with Drew Lock. But the biggest thing for me is that Tyler Lockett would shoot up my rankings and DK Metcalf would fall down quite a bit. You know, DK Metcalf, he's not a very good contested catch guy. He's not a very good route runner. What he's good at doing is just blowing past everybody on the deep on a nine route and getting that deep ball from Russell Wilson. Jimmy Garoppolo can't sling the ball 60, 65 yards downfield the way Russ can. So really, you know, this is a good question and it got me thinking a lot. And it might sound a little bit crazy. I promise I'm not trying to get hot takey here, but I might actually put Tyler Lockett ahead of DK Metcalf in my rankings for wide receivers if Jimmy Garoppolo ends up in Seattle.
That is a little bit hot takey. I for sure would move Lockett way up. I've talked about it like with, and we saw it last year when Geno Smith took over. Lockett does kind of need, he's more of that like timing precision guy now, like you talked about. And with the quarterbacks they have, that is not going to fit with Drew Lock. We didn't see it really work with Geno Smith last year. So yeah, he would for sure get the bump with Jimmy G if that happens. Once again, maybe we're just wasting our time here, spending a few minutes talking about this, but it's interesting when you look at it now where it really only seems like there's one landing spot for him. I know there's been rumors about he could go to Tampa. Some people have suggested, could he end up with the Browns if Deshaun Watson gets suspended here? Who knows? But really, it looks like Seattle's the spot that could use him the most. So fantasy-wise, I would like to see him end up there. And for me, it wouldn't change Metcalf much. I don't think I would bump him down, but I for sure would bump Lockett way up there. And then outside of that, there really isn't any pass catchers there you're overly excited about. Last news item that I want to talk about, Mike Reese at ESPN had an interview with Gronk at a charity event the other day. He flat out asked Gronk about the potential of him coming back, about the possibility that if Brady does call him up during the season, like Drew Rosenhaus kind of speculated, would Gronk answer the call and come back? Gronk gave a pretty definitive answer here. He said he's done with football. Anything could change. We know that. We see retired guys all the time. They get that itch and they end up coming back. It's not out of the question here that later in the season, Gronk's missing the game. He's seeing his teammates out on the field there and he gets a little more interested in returning, perhaps for a playoff run, right? Late in the season, something like that. But I'll be honest, The interview made me lean a little more towards thinking that Gronk could actually be finished. And I'm the last person who's going to get swayed by like just a couple quotes and one little interview, but he seemed pretty genuine in what he was saying. So I'm curious, did you have the same read on that interview? Do you actually think Gronk could be done here? Or are we still kind of expecting that, you know, there's maybe a, you know, 50-50 shot we might see him again either later this season or even potentially next year, like Rosenhaus suggested?
Yeah, when the news first came out, I was thinking this was kind of a faux, you know, Brady type of retirement where he said he'd retire and then possibly come back. But like you said, you know, he's got no reason to lie to Mike. Mike's got, you know, ties to the Patriots going way back to before Gronk was ever even there. They have a good relationship with each other. And like you said, it was very definitive that he said he is not coming back. Also, Mike Evans recently made a comment about how Gronk goes out there and plays every single snap with 100% intensity and how he's seen his body after the games and that he just takes a beating and he doesn't think he's ever coming back. So there's a lot of people that are swearing, you know, go out and get Gronk, he's going to return. I got to be honest, Justin, I can't help but feel like these are people who have Gronk on a bunch of dynasty and best ball rosters and they're just kind of hoping to manifest it into a reality, because everything that we're seeing and hearing makes it sound like Gronk is done.
Yeah, you're talking to one of them right now. I definitely have him on a few dynasty rosters. I definitely have him, and I'm hoping to get a little bit more out of him. And either way, you kind of have to hold him right now. I mean, if it's a more shallow league, maybe you drop him. But I think in most leagues, I'm still going to hang on to him here just on that chance that maybe we do see him later in the season, even if now I'm starting to think that's probably not likely. It could lead. We're going to see an interesting camp battle now potentially between Cam Brate and the rookie Cade Otton. Maybe even they bring in a free agent. We could see like a Jared Cook or something end up there. That is what we're looking at now for that tight end room. And with Chris Godwin not expected to be back until maybe October at the earliest. I know Russell Gage is there, but they're going to need those tight ends to step up. I'm not overly excited about Cam Brate, but he right now is going to be the leader in the clubhouse to be their starter and a guy who could score some touchdowns. We know in fantasy, you put up that big touchdown total, you can sneak into the low-end tight end one ranks. For my rankings, you look back at the splits when Gronk was out and at what Brate did in those games with Brady, he really didn't do that much. So I'm not really able to move him up, you know, to anything more than sort of that mid to low-end tight end two range. But wouldn't shock me. There's a lot of guys in that area that could move up and kind of sneak into the low-end tight end one ranks if everything goes well for them. And speaking of, I mean, that's a good transition here into what I wanted to talk about, all these training camp battles. The Tampa tight ends, that would definitely be one of them. But let's go into a few more here, talking about these training camp position battles that we're most interested in watching, the ones that we really are curious how it's going to play out. Maybe, and I talked to you before the show, I said a lot of the ones I put down were ones that I'm just not really sure how it's going to end up. It's not that I have any insight on these. It's that I'm just really curious myself to see how these go down over the next few weeks and the next month or so. And we can go back and forth here. We can toss out a few that we're particularly intrigued by and maybe give our prediction on how we think it's going to work out. I'll let you go first. The floor is yours. Which camp battle is going to draw your attention here over the next few weeks?
I hope you don't mind that I'm going to start this one off with a little bit of spice here, but I'm going to start with Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo. And I know we just talked about Jimmy Garoppolo, and I know everybody thinks that Trey Lance has the job. I was just checking this morning. His ADP is currently getting drafted as QB9 in Underdog. And I don't think that this situation is as clear cut as the fantasy community thinks it is. Kyle Shanahan loves Jimmy Garoppolo. We have seen it year after year after year. We're now, you know, a year and a half after Trey Lance has been drafted, and we still don't have a firm commitment that he's going to be the week one starter. Jimmy G hasn't been traded, despite multiple teams inquiring about him. We're getting these weird reports out of 49ers camp about Trey Lance's arm fatigue. And going back to last year's draft, there were the rumors that Shanahan wanted Mac Jones and Lance was forced into, you know, the team by the front office and the fan base. And I just think that where there's smoke, there's fire, and people are just completely ignoring a situation that could quickly go up in flames. Say what you want about wins not being a quarterback stat, but the 49ers are 31-14 with Jimmy Garoppolo under center since 2017, and they are 8-28 without him. This team plays well when Jimmy Garoppolo can function as the game manager and just quickly get the ball out to Debo, Kittle, and Ayuk. So as much as everybody is, you know, fully on board with Trey Lance being the week one starter, I think that Jimmy Garoppolo, if he doesn't get traded, is still going to be breathing on the back of his neck. And while it might not be a week one commitment to Jimmy Garoppolo either way, if Trey Lance has a stretch of games where he has two or three games where he's not playing well, I think he could get pulled to the bench really quickly for Jimmy Garoppolo. So right now, I think that we just all collectively as a fantasy football, industry, consensus, whatever you want to call it, need to pump the brakes a little bit on Trey Lance, because as long as Jimmy Garoppolo is still in San Francisco, his job is not secure.
Well, folks, that was Dave's one and only appearance on our show. This is definitely a Trey Lance show. How dare you come on and bring that up first? I hear you. And there has been a small part of me that has been worried that Kyle Shanahan's going to do something, which I think would be crazy. And to go back to Jimmy G at this point, I think with how much they invested in Trey Lance, I'm also just so puzzled by these mixed reports on Lance. You have so many people coming out, including his teammates. We saw Brandon Ayuk kind of making fun of the arm fatigue reports that came out. He posted something making fun of that yesterday. And we saw Lance and him out throwing. You have all the teammates really coming out and supporting him and being so excited about his upside. And then you have some people, and I don't know that there's been that many, in my opinion, really credible sources that have come out. You have a lot of former players coming out and saying things that they don't think he's the guy. Some of the analysts that maybe I would say I don't follow as much, let's just put it that way, who are saying things that, you know, they're not sure if he's the guy. I would be stunned, Dave. I would be stunned if Trey Lance. Now, is he not going to, he's going to have some trouble. Is there going to be some struggles early on? For sure. He is not the perfect prospect. You know, we've seen other guys. I don't want to always compare him to Josh Allen because, my God, that is the best case scenario of what he could be. But we've seen guys like Josh Allen. It's not perfect right away. They come out, they make mistakes, but they use that rushing ability. They kind of figure it out. And in my opinion, the marriage here with the weapons that they have, with the scheme, what it could be if Kyle Shanahan really embraces Trey Lance, I just think the upside is so high. And maybe that's how some people are looking at it. I don't know. But my one concern is that the offensive line there isn't great. And I would hate to see Lance get hurt early in the season if that line isn't strong and he takes too many hits and he goes down. And then that kind of complicates things, right? If he gets hurt and now Jimmy G comes in, now for sure we're in a complete mess of a situation at that point. But I don't know. That one for me, I am really behind Trey Lance at this point, and I think he is going to be a good pro.
I mean, talking about the upside, it's impossible to ignore that. I mean, with the playmakers there, with the coaching, with his rushing ability and athleticism, obviously the upside is there. I just think, you know, last year, right after the draft, when they traded up and they drafted Trey Lance, everybody immediately thought, well, Trey Lance is going to be the week one starter. He's going to take over at some point in the season. And we never saw that happen outside of an injury to Jimmy Garoppolo. Really, what this comes down to is me just not trusting a word that comes out of Kyle Shanahan's mouth. I mean, we have seen this guy just playing shenanigans for the last few years now. And until I see Lance out there in week one as the starter and looking good, I'm just going to constantly be concerned that Jimmy Garoppolo is just, you know, a moment away from stepping onto the field.
I will say, I think it's probably helped the situation a lot that Jimmy G hasn't been with the team due to the injury. It kind of allowed Lance to be the guy this offseason. And hopefully those reports we're hearing from the teammates are true, and they're all really excited about him as well. And we'll see him get out there and have a good season, and we won't see a muddled situation where Jimmy G finally gets healthy and comes back and causes problems. So hopefully this one doesn't turn into a big training camp battle. That's my approach on it. But you're talking about a team with a first round pick that, you know, you're not totally sold on yet. I'm going to bring up my first training camp battle here is going to be another situation kind of like that, where a team spent a first round pick on a guy and I don't know if he is going to be the guy there. And for me, I'm looking at the Chiefs running backs, and some people might think this is crazy, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you have Ronald Jones there, and you have Jerick McKinnon, who they just brought back. And CH, he has that draft capital. He's definitely going to get the first crack at the starting job this year. The Chiefs are going to give him every opportunity here to secure that spot atop the depth chart. But based on his performance, what we've seen so far over the last two seasons, he hasn't exactly locked himself into that role yet. And we've seen him get banged up both years. He was limited to 10 games as a rookie, played 13 games last season. And both years, we saw veteran players come in and kind of outperform him. Most recently, it was Jerick McKinnon down the stretch last year. And another concerning issue here is the Chiefs seem to have this hesitance to use him around the goal line, right? He had all those goal line carries in his NFL debut. He struggled with them. And then since then, the Chiefs have completely gone away from him in that area. So it wasn't surprising to me that they brought in someone like Ronald Jones, who Jones has a ton of flaws of his own. His pass protection isn't the best. Really not much of a threat as a pass catcher at all. But Jones is a pretty underrated runner, and I know he's kind of been a joke in the fantasy community at times. I've probably been guilty of that too, him being kind of that bust early on in his career, but he's somebody that I think can be the hammer for this offense, especially around the goal line. And Nate Taylor, The Athletic, he suggested that Jones is a legit candidate to actually earn the starting job if he has a strong camp. And maybe he's just basing that on Andy Reid had those comments of how Jones could be a major part of the offense this season after they sign him. But either way, I wouldn't be surprised if we look up at the end of the year and Ronald Jones has something like double-digit touchdowns and he turns out to actually be the better fantasy back. Now, I don't think it'll ever be a situation where he's the only guy. I think you're either going to have CH mixing in on passing downs. You have Jerick McKinnon mixing in on passing downs. You're going to need somebody else there as well. But Ronald Jones, I'm curious to see how this all shakes out. Who ends up as the lead dog? You have Tyreek Hill gone. We could see a little more work for the running backs in this offense. I still think it's going to be one of the better offenses in the league. I mean, are you with me? Do you have any thoughts on the Chiefs backfield? I'm not saying that I think it's going to definitely be Ronald Jones, but I probably have Ronald Jones ranked higher than most people. I still have CEH ranked above him. CEH is more in that high-end RB3 range, which maybe is lower than some just based on how I'm looking at this. And I also have Ronald Jones kind of in that low RB3 area because I think both these guys are going to have some value. And I think Ronald Jones could be a really sneaky pick. And if he has that great camp, maybe he turns into a bit of a breakout this year.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could push back on you because it makes for fun conversation, but I am in lockstep with you on this one, man. I think Ronald Jones is such an underrated runner. The two things that really kept him off the field were ball concern issues and inability to pass block. And especially with, you know, Tom Brady being in the twilight of his career, pass blocking is more important than anything. So that's why Leonard Fournette, who is a very good pass blocker, that's why he was able to stay on the field. But those little things Andy Reid doesn't really care about. You know, he brought in LeSean McCoy a few years ago, who has a terrible history of fumbling the ball. Patrick Mahomes can scramble enough that you don't have to worry about protecting him the same way that you do with Tom Brady. When it comes to being a pure runner, Ronald Jones is much better than Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Jerick McKinnon. So I'm with you. I think that he gets a lot of the early down work and then the goal line work, which there's going to be plenty of to go around in Kansas City, could all end up on Ronald Jones's plate. So at cost, I much prefer Ronald Jones to CEH.
All right. Who's the next training camp battle you're looking out for here?
All right, this one I'm gonna take it home. I'm a Bears fan, and this is one that I don't really get it, know how to get a shake on yet. David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert. Khalil Herbert was a guy who I wasn't crazy about coming into the league because he doesn't have really great measurables or a profile. He's got good vision, and I wasn't sure how that would translate to an NFL field, but he looked really good last year. Behind the same offensive lines, Herbert's vision awarded him an extra 0.5 yards per attempt before contact last year. After contact, David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert saw pretty similar efficiency. Khalil Herbert actually had a better broken tackle rate as well. When you look through all the efficiency metrics, Khalil Herbert just looked like he was the better running back last year. With Montgomery on the final year of his contract, you've got to imagine that the new staff wants to see what they've got in Herbert to save themselves from committing to a huge contract next offseason for Montgomery. And then they've got Luke Getsy, their new offensive coordinator. He comes from Green Bay, where we have consistently seen them lean on a committee in their backfield. I wouldn't be shocked at all to see, I would be pretty shocked if Herbert was able to outright take away the RB1 job from David Montgomery. But I think that we're going to be looking at a little bit more of a split and a committee than people are expecting. So right now, David Montgomery is getting valued as the RB20. Herbert is the RB51, and I think those ADPs should be much, much tighter. And I'm really interested to see how this shakes out throughout camp.
Once again, I'm going to go against you a little bit here. I agree that I think there is a chance that we see more of a two-man backfield a little bit, that we see somebody else get worked in. And really, that's all you're saying here. Like you said, you're not saying that he's going to completely unseat him. But Montgomery is one thing that you see reported often. I don't know that people talk about enough, is a big time leader in that room. Now, whether that's enough to, you know, get the new coaching staff on his side or not, but I think a lot of the players look to him. He's definitely one of the leaders on that offense. And he's been a guy that, at least fantasy wise, and that's really how I'm looking at it here. We're kind of mixing the two today. We're talking about these training camp battles and, you know, mixing in the fantasy outlooks, but fantasy-wise, Montgomery, I think, has just been a little bit better than people realized the last couple of years here. I mean, finished as the RB8 in PPR fantasy points per game in 2020, the RB19 in fantasy points per game last season. And he's also shown that he can do really, really well when he has these easy matchups. And as much as we can look at that Bears offense and say they haven't really got a lot of weapons coming in, I mean, they just traded for N'Keal Harry. That's really not moving the needle. They didn't really bring in the kind of weapons that you'd like to see them bring in for Justin Fields to really excel. But you look at this offense and you say, you look at the running back strength of schedule this year and our strength of schedule matrix, Montgomery is the easiest fantasy strength to schedule amongst all running backs. And the last couple of years when he's had these really easy stretches schedule wise, that's when he's come through and really delivered. So I think there's a chance that we see him maybe do a little better than people expect just because people aren't expecting too much from that offense this season. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if one of the other guys, whether it's him, whether it's the rookie Tristan Ebner, somebody else could get mixed in a little bit with Montgomery. I think they could put somebody else in there just as a change of pace guy, more than we've seen in the last couple of years. So I'll give you that one.
Fully, what you said about the leadership, that is a very real thing. And the new coaching staff has talked about that as well. When they had their introductory press conference, you know, every Bears fan was tuning in, just waiting for them to say, you know, we trust Justin Fields to be the future of this franchise. And they never came out and said that. The only player they talked about consistently being the leader in the locker room was David Montgomery. And they said his name over and over and over again in that introductory press conference. So you're definitely right in that aspect. He is a leader in the team and a lot of the players look up to him. A
lot of moving pieces there, though, with the, like you said, with the contract, you know, potentially ending. Are they going to bring him back? You're a leader in the locker room until you aren't, right? Next season, if they don't want to bring you back, they'll find the next leader. So we don't really know what his future there is with the team, but it'll be interesting to see how that one works out. We're going to talk a lot about running backs. We're going to keep this running back stretch going here. I want to talk about the Dolphins backfield. Chase Edmonds, Sony Michel, Raheem Mostert. That's how I have them ranked right now. I know some people have Mostert a little bit higher, but I think when you look at this backfield, you have Mike McDaniel coming over from the 49ers. That immediately should make your ears perk up, right? He might bring that Shanahan rushing scheme with him. And then you have the team just completely remake that backfield depth chart. They add Chase Edmonds, Mostert, Michelle. Completely bump everybody else down, right? Like, just not even close. Miles Gaskin, goodbye. You are not in the running at this point. It'd take a bunch of injuries for Gaskin to be fantasy relevant this year. And that makes sense, right? Gaskin was kind of an unexpected, you know, fantasy player, fantasy starter when he did pop up there. Now, it's possible that this could end up being a committee and just drive us crazy all season long. That is definitely in the range of outcomes. But I expect that Edmonds is going to be the most valuable of this crew. And there's a couple reasons why. The first is the money. Edmonds, 2 years, $12 million contract. Mostert, Michelle, they're both on one-year deals, just around $2 million. You have Mostert a little more than two, Michelle a little less. And I think that they really brought in Michelle. He came a little bit later. I think they brought him in because they're not sure if Mostert's going to be ready at the start of the year. And you look back, he missed almost all last season. He got hurt in week one, never came back after that. Still fighting his way back from this knee cartilage issue. McDaniel, he said they expect him to be ready in week one, but they aren't going to rush it. And when he's ready, he'll be on the field. That's not exactly a guarantee that he's going to be out there, in my opinion. And even if he is out there for week one, we're talking about a 30-year-old back who hasn't been able to stay healthy. Whenever he's been given consistent touches, he always breaks down. So I'm really tempering my expectations for Mostert, even though he might have a bit of an edge on the other guys just because he knows the system already. But that, to me, leaves Edmonds as the most intriguing option with the money backing him and with the fact that, really, he's the only one with the pass-catching chops, right? That elevates him over Mostert and Michelle for me. Mostert, more that early down, volume-dependent type guy, hasn't seen a ton of targets in the NFL. I'll be watching Mostert's recovery. I'm curious to see how Michelle's going to fit in here, whether he's just kind of going to be that complimentary guy. But I'm projecting Edmonds to be the lead back, to have a chance at putting up RB2 fantasy numbers behind what should be an improved offensive line there. They brought in Terron Armstead, a better system, obviously, like I touched on, a ton of firepower now in the passing game with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle breaking out last year. They're going to pressure defenses downfield. I'm kind of excited. I think this could be one of those backfields where we get a major discount and we actually see somebody emerge from. Are you at all intrigued by these guys?
You know, I'm really not. And I think that there's going to be some opportunities here to plug these guys in weekly and get some points out of them. But I just came across a stat recently that absolutely blew my mind. You know, everybody talks about the Kyle Shanahan offense and how it, you know, produces great running backs. Since Kyle Shanahan became the coach of the San Francisco 49ers, all the way back in 2017, there's only been one top 24 running back that's been produced by that team. So what happens is the way that this outside zone scheme works is you're putting players out in space where they have to make one cut. First of all, that cut that they have to make upfield puts a lot of pressure on their knees. Second of all, they're out in space where they're taking some really, really big hits. So the problem that you have consistently is these guys getting injured, and you see it over and over and over again. And it's kind of a joke, you know, what's in the water in San Francisco? Why is everybody getting hurt? If we're looking for them to implement that same exact offense in Miami, you could expect more injuries. And then you look at all of the guys there, Chase Edmonds, Raheem Mostert, Miles Gaskin, they're all undersized. And that's what scares me, is these guys are all right around 200 pounds, taking big hits consistently. So, it's really tough for me to get excited about anybody here. The one guy I've been drafting at cost is Raheem Mostert, just because of his familiarity with the offense. But then even Sony Michel, getting him in the 18th, 19th, 20th round, he is the only guy that's over 220 pounds. So I think that he gets some of the goal line work where there's a lot of value there. Realistically, though, I've just kind of been staying away from this backfield, and I'm sure that there is gold to be found. I just don't know who it's going to be. And I'm not confident enough in anybody here to plant a strong flag.
Yeah, it might end up being, like you said, the Shanahan system. It's more about the overall rushing production than necessarily having one guy become a huge star. We saw Elijah Mitchell do pretty well for them last year, but I'm with you that maybe you just kind of toss some darts, especially at the cost, right? It's not a huge risk going in on any of these guys based on where they're going ADP-wise. So I kind of like just throwing them. I don't know that I would do it with Mostert as much, but maybe. But definitely Sony Michel, and I like Edmonds, just putting some chips on those guys and seeing if at some point in the year they end up giving you a good stretch of production. All right, back to you. Who you got?
Let's stick with Miami. And I'm just going to talk about the receivers here, man. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. And there's, you know, a chance that both of them can coexist. But I'm really interested in seeing who the guy is going to be, similar to, you know, the Deebo Samuel role that we saw in San Francisco that provided so many fantasy points. I thought the acquisition of Hill was a bit odd because him and Waddle are almost identical. When you look at their skill sets and their profiles and all that, they're both small and compact with abilities after the catch. They can also blow the top off of defense and get open downfield. When Mike McDaniel signed with Miami as their head coach, it was really easy to see Waddle taking on that Deebo role that gets us all so excited. But now with Hill there, it isn't so clear. And my gut reaction to the trade was that it would limit both receivers' upside. But the more I dove into it, the more faith I'm starting to have in Tyreek Hill to come out atop this depth chart. Now, Waddle just set the rookie reception record and logged over 1,000 yards in his first season. It's really hard to fade any player who did that in their first year. But Hill has been one of the best players in the league since he was drafted. And there's this idea that he's a downfield burner, but like I was saying with Lockett earlier, he's developed into a lower ADOT, yard after the catch guy. And, you know, we've just seen how his role has changed in the NFL, and that's adapted over time. But what really blew my mind is that Tyreek Hill was a running back, a pure running back when he was in college. He didn't start playing wide receiver until he came into the NFL. So I don't think that he's going to have that huge play upside where he's going to be adjusting to 70-yard balls downfield coming from Patrick Mahomes just because Tua doesn't have that arm strength. But I think that we're going to see a lot of jet sweeps and screens to get the ball in space to Tyreek Hill. And, I mean, just look at what Miami invested in him. A first-round pick, a second-round pick, 2 fourth-round picks, a sixth-round pick, and $120 million. I think they are going to have a lot of reasons to try to get the ball into Tyreek Hill's hands. And it's just tough for me to draft Jalen Waddle at cost. Like we said, this is probably going to be a run-first team. I don't think they're going to have any, you know, sky-high pace of play or anything like that. So what you're banking on is Tua Tagovailoa to support two top 20 wide receivers in fantasy on a run-first team. I just don't see that happen. Right now, Hill's getting drafted as wide receiver 9. Waddle's getting drafted as wide receiver 18. And I just prefer paying up for Hill at that cost and just fading Waddle down the board just a tad. But I'm really hoping that we get some clarity coming out of camp over the coming months before redraft season hits.
Yeah, and that's one of those ones where both guys are going to be on the field plenty. It's not like the running back ones we're talking about where maybe one guy emerges as big-time lead back. That's more of a pecking order position battle, right? Who's going to end up being the number one guy? I have one like that, and I have it in the exact same division as well. Who's going to be the Jets' number one receiver? Garrett Wilson, Elijah Moore, even Corey Davis is still kind of in the running there, right? And there's a lot of things I think we're going to be watching about this Jets offense because it's a really exciting young group they have there. If Zach Wilson, if he could take the next step, which he should be able to do with all this talent around him, and we don't have to get into it. We don't have to make jokes about him chasing older women. There was a little gossipy drama around this week. You know, it's a slow time in the NFL news cycle when we get into, you know, sleeping with your mom's friend, when that portion of the offseason rumor mill. But on the field, Wilson has, there's no excuses anymore, right? The weapons are good. The line got better. He just has to answer the bell now. And if he does, I'm so curious who's going to end up being the guy who gets more targets here. And like I said, this is less about who's going to crack the starting lineup. All three of these guys are going to be on the field plenty. This is more about who can emerge as really his favorite target. And I really like Garrett Wilson. I think you could make a case for all these guys. I think it's a situation where maybe we'll see it rotate kind of week to week, depending on the game plan, depending on the defensive matchups with them. But to me, Garrett Wilson has the number one traits. He has the higher draft capital behind him. Moore might have the edge this season, just while Garrett gets acclimated to the pros. But this is one of those ones, Dave, where I'm not going to sit here right now and pretend and lie to people that I have some great insight on who exactly I know 100% for sure who is going to be the guy who gets the most targets here. I think this is one that I really want to monitor in training camp in the preseason to see who I think is going to end up on top. And it might be one where my rankings change a little bit, where right now I have Moore with the edge over Wilson, but I think it could be a situation where all these guys have some pretty good fantasy games.
Yep, agree with you there. And you know, I have no idea how this is going to shake out either. I've been drafting both guys. Like you said, you know, Garrett Wilson's got the better profile. You know, he's got the better measurables, draft capital, you name it. But you can't ignore what Elijah Moore did as a rookie. So these two are neck and neck in my rankings. And I really struggle to put one over the other. And I've just been drafting them both at cost.
All right. Give me who else you got in your list. We're going a little long here. Give me who else you got, kind of the quick rundown, if you can, of anybody else you had on your list for these training camp battles.
All right. I'm going to get really deep and gross with this last one then. Let's do Evan Engram and Dan Arnold. And I know this is, you know, probably outside of two tight end leagues, you're probably not looking at either of these guys here, but in best ball, especially where you need to roster two or three tight ends, it's worth talking about. Last year, Dan Arnold pulled a very solid target share once he joined Jacksonville. If you disregard the first game where he only played 32% of the team snaps, he averaged 7.6 targets per game from weeks 5 to week 10 before he was injured. To put that into perspective, Mark Andrews, Darren Waller, Travis Kelce, those were the only guys that averaged more than 7.6 targets per game over an entire season. Now, that's a very small sample size, but with Arnold being, you know, a 6'6" pass catcher, there's a lot to get excited about. And now we've got Doug Peterson there, who has finished top three in two tight end sets every single year as a head coach. You can look back at the history of coaches or tight ends that he's coached with Ertz and Goddard and say that it was a little bit more causation than correlation. But when Ertz got hurt in 2020, Richard Rodgers came into a really steady role in his absence. So I think that it's just how Peterson likes to run his offense. So now the Jags bring in Evan Engram, and they pay him $9 million, had one of the best rookie seasons we've ever seen from a tight end, and struggled to really do much after that. But you've got two tight ends here that are both very talented and have struggled with opportunity over the last few years, and a coach that I think is going to really focus on getting them the ball. So we might see two tight end splits in a pretty, you know, even split. But I think both of these guys, either Evan Engram or Dan Arnold, whoever takes that step forward could easily finish in tight end one territory.
Well, and in my, I do, you know, breakouts and busts and sleepers and all that stuff. In the sleeper column, I put Evan Engram in there, and there was one stat that I kind of found pretty interesting. Trevor Lawrence, he might have favored throwing to the tight ends last year. You look at the group that he had, and yeah, Arnold was there. He had James O'Shaughnessy, Jacob Hollister. You know, those guys aren't the most exciting names, but they combined for a 37.5% target share in 2021. So I have Engram as a guy that I think could be a bit of a sleeper here. But yeah, depending how it works out, it could be either of those guys stepping up. I'll throw out one more here, and this is one that everybody's probably going to be watching, but the Texans starting running back, who's it going to be? Marlon Mack, Damian Pierce, the rookie? Could Rex Burkhead surprise us again and kind of get in there? There could be some value in this Texans back. It's another one where you're not going to have to pay up for any of these guys, so there's really no risk involved. When you have a guy like Burkhead last year giving you some usable fantasy weeks, and I think he had four games down the stretch or four games the second half of the season where he had double-digit PPR fantasy points, so he could get into starting lineups with that. When he's doing that, it really is going to pique my interest here when they bring in some more guys like Mack and like Pearson. Mack now going to be 2 years removed from that Achilles tear. So that tends to be the time that, you know, if a guy is going to get back anywhere close to his pre-injury form, sometimes you see it happen after 2 years. And with Pierce, the rookie, he was a really tough evaluation in the pre-draft process for me because he looked the part of a competent back, but Florida really didn't use him as one. And I saw him as a hard charger. He definitely found extra yards on his runs, but the limited snaps, the limited volume, that made me pause a bit. I think he probably will profile more as a committee back in the pros. My comp for him was Spencer Ware, and Spencer Ware, a guy is probably not going to get anybody in the fantasy community too excited, but a guy who had some moments as the lead back when he got opportunities, but ultimately was kind of best suited to be a committee guy. Either way, there isn't much tip in the Texans' hand right now, one way or another at the moment. I think that Burkhead is a real long shot here, probably still worth rostering in deeper dynasty leagues just in case. But my prediction right now is that Mack's going to be the more valuable just by a hair over Pierce. But it's another one where I really think we have to wait and see what happens in camp and in the preseason and see how that's going to shake out. I would take shots on both those guys, though, because there's just no risk at all where you're going to have to get them. You're going to get them well outside the top 100 picks ADP-wise. I'll rattle off a couple others here. I mean, you could look at, I'm just going to empty the chamber here because we're getting down to the end. Backup running backs is one that I think you really got to pay attention to at this time of year over the summer practices. You get the Bengals, Samaje Perine, Chris Evans. Perine's the incumbent as the number two there, but Evans, a guy who's been getting some hype. And when you look back what he did last season, I mean, he really only got one game where he saw more than 50% of the offensive snaps. That was in week 18. He rushed 7 times for 35 yards, got 4 passes for 24 yards and a touchdown, finishes the RB15 that week. There's been talk that Joe Mixon maybe won't get as much work on third downs. That could be a spot where Evans could come in, have a little bit of value, but maybe that allows him to kind of win that number two job. And in an offense that we expect to be really good, that offensive line going to be better after they rebuilt the right side, Evans could all of a sudden pop up as a big-time fantasy asset if Joe Mixon gets hurt. The Cardinals, would it be Darrell Williams? Would it be the rookie Keontae Ingram? Really, right now, I think Ito Benjamin is back as the favorite. Cliff Kingsbury talked him up really unprompted to the media recently, so could be Benjamin's role as the number two there, and that's one of note just because James Conner's injury history. The Falcons, Tyler Algier, the rookie, people see him as that kind of grinder back. Maybe he pairs well with Cordarrelle Patterson, but don't forget Damian Williams is there. The veteran, maybe a guy that could end up trusting a little more out in the field, depending how Algier does. The Giants, that one, their backfield kind of uncertain behind Saquon Barkley, Matt Breida, the rookie Joshua Corbin, even Antonio Williams, who was on the Bills practice squad. He popped up a couple years ago for that one massive fantasy game, and he was one of the first moves that they made when the Bills crew came over there. So they brought him in. He could be a guy that maybe moves up the depth chart over the summer. The Steelers, Benny Snell, kind of know what he is at this point, just a, you know, early down guy. Anthony McFarlane got a little wiggle to him, but hasn't really done much over the first couple years in the season here. Mateo Durant, Jaylen Warren, a couple undrafted free agents. There's also been talk that they could bring in a veteran guy. We know Latavius Murray's still out there, David Johnson, Devonta Freeman, Jordan Howard. So a lot of options for who the Steelers could and probably should bring in. They probably need some more help there. I don't know if I really trust any of those guys. The Titans is another one. And maybe this one, maybe Hilliard already is the guy here, but Dontrell Hilliard, he had some games last year where he really popped up, and the rookie Hassan Haskins might profile a little more like a Derrick Henry, more of that power guy, but Hilliard totaled at least 55 yards from scrimmage and or a touchdown in 5 of his 7 appearances with the Titans last year. So a guy I know, Deonta Foreman was great for them last year. He's not there anymore. Hilliard maybe could be the guy. And that's one where you're not necessarily going to go and draft all those guys, maybe more late round guys or guys that you're going to grab off the waiver wire early in the season or if the starter goes down. But some battles that we want to watch here just to see who emerges. And so you have that leg up when an injury does happen during the season. Any more in the chamber that you want to throw out there, Dave?
You know, I think you covered just about all of them, and I really like taking a look at who the backup running back is going to be. The only other one, and this has probably been talked about, you know, ad nauseum at this point, but I am really interested to see whether it's going to be Cortland Sutton or Jerry Jeudy stepping up into that lauded and sought after role as Russell Wilson's wide receiver one. I think that's the last cap battle that I have going to be paying especially close attention to this offseason.
And don't sleep. This is a Tim Patrick podcast as well. Don't sleep on Tim Patrick having a good year. I don't know if he's going to be the number one guy, but he definitely could have a good year.
Him. And they made a huge financial commitment to him too. So he's definitely going to be getting some touches this year.
And just rounding up my list, you know, the Bills slot receiver between Jamison Crowder and Isaiah McKenzie. Crowder, the seasoned vet, and McKenzie, maybe more of that explosive guy. Knowing the Bills, they'll be smart and they'll use them both. But if one of the guys emerges, we could see them have some good fantasy value. The Cowboys number two receiver, while Michael Gallup's hurt, it's going to be between the rookie Jalen Tolbert, free agent James Washington, who they brought in. Tolbert seems like a guy who maybe could have some early season value there until we get Gallup back midway through the year, later in the year, depending when he's ready after that ACL tear. The Ravens number two receiver, I'm just throwing them all. I'm throwing everything at the wall here, Dave. You know, James Proche, Devin Duvernay, Tylan Wallace. Could they bring in a veteran free agent? Could that be a landing spot for a Julio Jones or somebody? The Bears' number two receiver, I think it's probably going to be Byron Pringle, but Velus Jones, Dante Pettis, Equanimeous St. Brown, N'Keal Harry, who we mentioned earlier, just got traded there. Giants tight ends, and we're going real deep now. This is tight end premium, two tight end leagues. Going to be between Ricky Seals-Jones, Jordan Akins, Daniel Bellinger, and Austin Allen, another rookie there as well. All of them got time with the first team offense, I believe, during OTAs. So no real leader in the clubhouse there. And the one that I'll mention, the Packers tight ends. I know a few reports have trickled out that maybe Robert Tonyan won't be ready for week one. And if he's not, who's it going to be? Is it going to be Josiah DeGuara, who might be more of that H-back, not necessarily the starting tight end? Mercedes Lewis is getting up there. Tyler Davis is actually a name that he had a couple games late last year. We've heard their GM, Brian Gutekunst, come out and say that Davis might be, you know, maybe they found something there. He could be a guy for them. So that's another one that in extremely deep leagues, extremely deep, he could be a guy that you're looking at. But that I've probably thrown out way too many here at the end. I just wanted to get them all out. That's all for today's show. It's so exciting to talk about these training camp battles, just knowing they're right around the corner now. And we'll have some actual news coming out of practices starting next week. And that's when the real grind begins, right? Trying to keep up with every little item that trickles out from beat writers and team sites or even social media accounts from players and stuff. Now you got to watch that stuff too. You get some information sometimes from those. You got to stay on top of all of it. And that's what we're here to help you do. And that's why we have great guests like Dave Kluge on all throughout the year. And Dave, thank you so much for taking the time, man. I'm glad we're finally able to do this. I'll remind people they can find all your work over at Football Guys. They can follow you on Twitter at Dave Kluge. Anything else you want to direct them towards? Anything before we let you go here that you think people should check out you've been working on?
No, I'm thrilled to be exclusive at Football Guys. This time last year, it was, you know, find me here on this day and here on this day and writing content over here. But nope, it is all at Football Guys and at Dave Kluge now.
Well, as for me, the rankings, the Dynasty Trade Value Charts, all that stuff's up to date. We've continued to roll out that preview series with the breakouts, the busts, the sleepers, risky picks. The latest one was super deep sleepers, which is guys who are going outside of the top 200 picks, but who should be on your radar as maybe those, you know, late round picks or waiver wire pickups early in the season. Always fun. I love trying to dig for gold in that post every year. You don't hit on all of them, but as long as you hit on a couple of them, it ends up being worth it. And then the 2022 Fantasy Football Draft Kit at the Score. It's going to be up next week. We'll launch that to coincide with training camps kicking off. And as always, it's free. All my content over the Score is free, including this show. So I will be back next week with another episode. But until then, big thanks again to Dave. Big thanks to everybody out there for listening. And we will see you next time.
Said leave on time, my baby. Said leave on time. Leave on time with me tonight. Said leave on time.